Hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Today, CBS Sports Radio turns 10 years old. And since this is the 10-year anniversary of CBS Sports Radio, I wanted to go to one man and one man only to talk about 10 years ago and go around the sports world. And this is not maybe my favorite person to ever work here at CBS Sports Radio. And I'll never forget when I first started hosting the weekend overnights. I've never met Scott Farrell in my life, but I used to listen to him all the time. He comes out into the newsroom and he goes, "Kid, listen up. I just gave you the best promotion you'll ever get." And he literally promoted me for 5 minutes on his show without even asking. And that's the type of guy Scott Farrell is. So welcome back, Farrell on the bench, the great Scotty Farrell. Scott, how you been?
My man, what's happening, Zach? Happy New Year, buddy. Hope everybody's great on CBS Sports Radio out there.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you coming on. So 10 years ago, I think it was Peter Schwartz was the update anchor who was the first voice on CBS Sports Radio, and then your show launched. What do you remember about 10 years ago?
I just remember, obviously, it was pretty cool, right? Like, so I was working at Sirius at the Howard Stern channels, and one thing led to another, and I started talking to the powers that be at CBS at the time. Basically, I hooked up with Chris Oliveiro, who's an incredible suit and a powerful dude in radio, and he used to be my producer back in the day when I did mornings on NEW in New York, and then Opie and Anthony were on in the afternoons, and Chris just rose to power in radio, and I couldn't be happier for him. Just a cool dude who I had a great relationship with. And then at the time, the Dick brothers were involved with Cumulus, and they took me to lunch one day, and they said, "We're starting CBS Sports Radio, and we want you to come, you know, do your thing for us at night and rock out, you know, syndicate it again." And I was like, you know, I had done CBS and Infinity and Westwood One, Farrell on the Bench back in L.A. in the day and WFAN in New York. So it was really exact full circle for me, right? These guys are like, just come back to CBS. And I, you know, I had had so much success there. And I had worked with Howard for about, I think, 8 or 9 years. And I love Howard. I look up to him. He's like one of my heroes in the business. And I just, you know, I felt like the writing was on the wall for me to do something new. I thought Howard was going to change the channels. I was right. At the time, I just felt like it was going to become a bigger thing for Howard. Like both channels were going to be more dedicated to him. And I just felt like it was a chance for me to do something, finish what I started. If you remember, I left CBS to go to the Thrashers in 99 to do NHL play-by-play, and I went on Letterman and announced that I was leaving the radio show to do hockey play-by-play. It didn't go over well with the suits, the way I handled it at the time, but I stand by it because I was sitting there with David Letterman. I'm on Letterman, and they're mad at me. Like, I give a rat's ass what you think of me. And so they were very angry. And so I went to work in Atlanta for Ted Turner. And, you know, all those years later, imagine getting that call that they want me back, like, of all things. So I took it. I took the gig, and I did it. And I remember going on the air. And the thing I remember most, Zach, was that I had to be clean because I had been so filthy and awful and horrendous and heinous and disgusting and despicable and awesome on Howard 101 that I had to put a sign in front of me on the table as I did the show that said zero tolerance, no cussing, don't swear. And I put it in big, bold letters. And I left it there every night for, like, I think about 6 months. And then, like, at that point, I think I had gotten over the, geez, how am I going to do it without swearing? Because it was, you know, clean radio. And I'd been doing this debauchery radio with no censorship. I mean, it was crazy. And so to go back and do it clean, all the suits at CBS thought I was going to, you know, probably lose my mind and start being dirty and get in trouble again with them and the FCC. And it just never happened. I was lucky that I put the sign down, Zach, because I think there was potential for me to slip and to screw it all up. And I never wanted to do that. I wanted to actually pull it off and be the dirtiest guy ever that went back and did clean and pulled it off. And I think I was there like what, like 8 years, 7 years, something like that. And I did it and I loved it. And I was able to find friends like you, and I was able to find Carver High, Mike Carver. And I basically went to Steve Summers at the Fan and said, I want to steal your guy and make him my Artie Lang. And I wanted to make Mike my, you know, sidekick with Mafia and be on air and be funny. And we pulled it off. You know, they let us do it for all those years together, all of us. And the show was really cool, and it was edgy, and it was funny, and it was demented. And then we left and went to do, you know, sports gambling television, which is what I'm doing now at Sports Group. So all I have, Zach, I swear to God, is the fondest memories and just all good times and good friends and great relationships. And the fact that I was there for that long, I'll tell you the weirdest thing that came of it. I ended up being friends with Mark Chernoff, who like absolutely loathed me. And literally, I drove him nuts. When I was throwing a bench in L.A. and the Fan in New York, at late at night at 10 to 1 in New York, the show was number one. But my relationship with my bosses was negative 50 million.
Right? I love Mark, but it's the most anti-Mark Chernoff radio with what you do.
He used to say, he literally would yell at me on the phone every day in L.A. and he'd say, stop with the Jesus lizard and you quit talking hockey. And what's with all the heavy metal and the drinking and the drugs and just this prostitutes? And then it was so funny because I didn't listen to him. I was young and stupid, and I was syndicated in 250 cities, and Mel Karmazin paid me a lot of money. And I was like, Don Imus told me one day, don't listen to him, kid. You're awesome. So I was like, you're right. I'm not going to listen to anyone. I'm going to tell everyone to F off. And it just did not go over well. And then when I got old, I realized all my errors. And I was like, I think I need to grow up at some point. And I think it was when I finally got married and had kids. It ruined me in terms of being that troublemaking, wild shock jock, whatever you want to call me. People have called me everything, Zach, but I'm really just a normal dude. You know me. I'm pretty cool. Like, I see you at the Super Bowl. We're always friends. We get along. There's none of this ego, and I matter, and I'm so important. I just think I'm a normal dude that did a cool thing that people dug for 40 years. I've somehow pulled it off. The longevity of it for me has been the success for me is all that I'm still doing it, and people still dig me. Millions of people watch me every day. And millions listened to us when we were on CBS or Howard Stern. And that I'm still pulling that off, that's what's crazy for me. But just being there was an experience that was really good for me. You know, it was all gravy, man. I never had any regrets taking the job. And then I didn't really have any regrets when I left to go do sports gambling TV. Because, as you know, I have a massive gambling problem. I'm right where I need to be.
Well, that's the thing, Scott. You were so innovative because you know how it is. Like, 3 years ago, you used to mention gambling, and you would get calls, and people would say, you got to get rid of this guy. You were doing this ever since the start at CBS Sports Radio. Now you can't turn on the radio without hearing gambling.
So when I was in L.A., right, and remember, this is like 94, I was syndicated everywhere, and it was a WFAN show. And every Friday, the show, we would do college football and pro football betting. And I would go on the air, and I would tell people all the money lines and spreads and totals and teasers to bet. And I would do every single game in the NFL and college football. So college football, it was literally probably 150 games a week, and I would go through all of them. And at the time, Zach, people had a pen and a pad of paper. There were no cell phones. There was no, let me take a picture of the picks and I'll be good to go. Just give me all your picks really quick. It was, you had to listen to the whole show, and we would just sit there on the air and gamble all night on national radio. And I cannot tell you how many people sued me and tried to have me put in prison, that I was the devil, and I was basically a child molester because I taught gambling. It was so taboo. It was so bad. The leagues hated me. the NFL, all of them. This guy talks gambling. We can't have it. He's bad news. Stay away from him. He's nothing but trouble. And then fast forward to now. So when the Supreme Court passed the gambling laws and everything changed in America, now all those same people that defied me were now sleeping with me. And they're all making billions of dollars. And I'm doing it for a living. So I'm right where I need to be. Hopefully I'll keep doing it, what I'm doing, until I wrap it up. Like, I'm 57 now, but I kind of just want to put my kids through college. And one's going to college next year.
Wow.
And the other one's a freshman. And seeing them grow up and go off to college, kind of, I think that'll be the end for me. I'm not one of those dudes that'll, I'm not going to be the dude that stays on the air until he's 70, 75. It's not happening, Zach. I'm going to go surfing, and I'm going to smoke a fatty, and I'm going to look at girls in bikinis one way or the other professionally at some point here in the next, I'd say, by the time I'm 64, 65, believe me, I'll be long gone. I'm not a hanger-on dude. Like, they say if, like, Joe Paterno or whatever, when he stopped coaching, he died. If I stop doing the show, I'll be just fine, bro. I'll be just fine. I'll play basketball and hopefully get a little leg. My wife hasn't left me yet, so it's all good. And, I guess CBS Sports Radio is part of the journey. And I'm proud of you. I think you're a badass. I'm happy that you've done so well with your career and your life. And I always love seeing you, so I'm always rooting for you.
I appreciate that. Scott Farrell here with us. I had a big regret last week because I didn't think about it until afterwards. We had Jay Gruden on, and then afterwards I go, I just started hearing Scott Farrell in the background screaming, "You fat ass!" What did you call Jay Gruden once a fat ass? Yeah. Tell that story, because that's one of the all-time great stories.
Well, I got under his skin, obviously, and made fun of him a lot, and I called him a fat ass. And I just kept pounding him with it until he finally snapped. And he, started getting really mad about the guy on the radio that calls him fat ass. And then it became like a, big thing. It became a story in the papers. And, obviously, once again, people trying to get me in trouble. But all it was being funny. It's funny, like today, my TV show is really funny. And I have Carver High on it. And the two of us, all we do is gamble and make fun of people. And we make fun of ourselves. So it's kind of like, and people may not know what this means, but Mystery Science 3000 used to be the two little animals that sat in the corner of the movie theater and made fun of the show on the TV on the screen, right? Like it was like they just abused everything for the entire movie. All they did was abuse people and make fun of them. And it was always kind of the concept of what we're doing now, where we just make fun of people so much that it really is kick ass. And it's a blast and people dig it. And I think it's because we're self-deprecating too. It's not like it's just us abusing others. We abuse ourselves and each other because we're all, getting older and fatter and slower and everything else. So it's just a lot of fun. But I remember back in the day, that guy, he wanted me dead. And I also know that he sucked as a coach. So it doesn't matter what he thinks.
Wrapping up with Scott Farrell. You've done everything that you could do in this business. When you talked about the end and how it's not that far away for probably your time doing this. What's the one memory that just stands out above the rest for you?
Well, I guess, to be honest, and I don't want to feel like I'm in the casket yet or anything, just I will dunk on your face, Zach, in basketball, as you know.
I may elbow you, Scotty Farrell. We'd be going right back and forth on the court in the paint.
6'4", 220. You're a big boy, and I still play every day of the week. So I'm not in the casket yet, but I would say, for me, it's pretty simple. When I was Farrell on the bench nationally, and Mel Karmazin made me enormous, and I got to do MTV and all this other stuff, the thrill for me was going on David Letterman twice and meeting Letterman and him coming to see me do a live show in a blizzard in New York City at Rosie O'Grady's. I'm on the air live in front of 500 people in a bar, and here comes David Letterman down the stairs to watch me perform.
Wow.
And that night, Syracuse was playing in the NCAA basketball tournament. It was snowing in Manhattan, And of all people to come walking in that bar, which was right from the Late Show Theater a few steps away, when he walked in and he saw me doing the show and I looked over and saw him, you know, I almost, you know, it was almost right then and there I dropped dead. That was cool for me. Then having Howard Stern hire me was amazing. And then, you know, working for him for all those years was incredible. Nothing compares to it. And for me, that was it. And then everything else I've done since, all the shows at CBS Sports Radio, what I'm doing at Sports Grid TV, all that's just gravy. It's all cool. So I'd say, you know, when you get on Letterman, not once but twice, that did it for me.
No doubt about it. Before we let you run, I got to sprinkle in just two sports topics here. The Metropolitan is always nuts. I know your Penguins lose today in the Winter Classic, but where you at on the Penguins this year? And then also the Steelers, or Kenny Pickett's really starting to show some things.
Well, touchdown Kenny's a freak. Where are all the people making fun of his small hands now?
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row, nothing but ropes and nothing but clutch play, comebacks, fourth quarter, last drive, finishing, winning. Getting it done. Last night, the pass to Najee was sickening on that angle with the body going the other way and to sling it on that rope and lead him like that into the corner between that kind of coverage and being that ripped. I said it was like watching Brady or Montana or Aaron Rodgers in like their prime, absolutely lighting people up with brilliant passes. That's what I saw today on the show. I said, In 3 years, he's going to be basically Burrow. And at some point or another, that guy's winning a ring. Get ready for number 7 in Pittsburgh. That guy's a winner. I don't care if he wears gloves, has little hands. I don't care what anyone thinks. That guy's a badass. And the Penguins today, obviously, I bet on the Bruins because they're the best team in hockey. And I think the Penguins stink. I love the Penguins more than I love my family. But, you know, I saw them lose. They were up 4-0 to the Red Wings. They lose 5-4. I wanted to puke. It's not like I don't think they're a playoff team, Zach, because they are. I still think they're good, right? But, I mean, the bottom line is the Devils are having a better season. The Canes have won, what, 11 in a row. All they do is win. I think the Rangers have better goaltending. You know, I think the Capitals have Ovi, but I wouldn't, you know, think that they're that good or that much better than the Penguins. The Penguins still have Crosby and Malkin. People can say they're old or whatever, but they still produce at a massively high level. They have a great power play. I think they're a real average road team, and I think they're pretty tough at home. At home, they're like, you know, the power play clicks, they score a lot of goals. On the road, they're beatable. So at the end of the day, I don't think they're sniffing the cup this year, but I think they're still more than likely a playoff team. There's teams that are way better. Like, I know the Leafs choke a lot in the playoffs, but one of these days they're not going to choke because they're loaded and they're dangerous and they're fast. And I think the Penguins won 5 Stanley Cups, and they did it with skill and speed. Back in the days of Lemieux and Jagr, untouchable. And when they won the 3 with Crosby, they definitely did it with speed. I thought, you know, Jagr and Lemieux were different kinds of talents than Sid Crosby and Malkin. But those guys, that team was so fast that won the 3 Cups, and Fleury was so good in goal that's why they won him. No one can ever take away the 5 Stanley Cups and the 6 Super Bowls. I went to, you know, I've seen them lose. I saw Aaron Rodgers beat the Steelers, but I'm real good over here, Zach, with my 11 titles. I'm doing real good. I got a hot tub. I got boobs to a toe. I got chicks in bikinis, and we got a lot of chips. And the Pharrell Ballers have 11 basketball chips, too. And we'll dunk on your ass. I'll see you soon, Zach. I'll dunk on your ass.
You got it. Scott Farrell, one more for you. I got a minute here. I just got to know, because I was on Tulane today, plus 1.5. Were you?
I was on the over 65, and I hit it. I was on Mississippi State -3, and the miracle late play cover with
crazy
the Tisney scoop and score was delicious. I was on LSU -14 and a hook, and in-game -41, and that puppy covered. And I'm rolling Penn State right now like a spleef. And I'm on the Bengals tonight, too, because Joey Cool is good to go with number 8 in a row. Check out. Ooh.
Scott Farrell, I love you. You're the best. I'm sure we'll see you at the Super Bowl. Thank you. Can't thank you enough for doing this.
My man, Zach, happy anniversary to CBS Sports Radio. Tell my man Olive I love him up there upstairs with all those other suits I don't like.
You got it. The great Scott Farrell. Oh, I miss him. He's outstanding. He's one of one. That's all I got to say. Scott Farrell is one of one, and we had to bring him on. It wouldn't be a party without Farrell, and we're celebrating 10 years here at CBS Sports Radio, so I wanted to shake it up a little bit and chat it up with Scotty Farrell.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Man, I'm still laughing from Scott Farrell joining us for really what is an electric 20 minutes from him looking back at CBS Sports Radio and some of the times that he had here, as the network does turn 10 years old today. And you look at really the weekend of sports that we just had too. Michigan losing to TCU, TCU off to the national championship game. Georgia taking down Ohio State with all the craziness in that game, with the game-winning kick that was potentially there for Ohio State that was wide to the left, and it was kicked in 2022 and landed in 2023. A wild weekend in the NFL. Tom Brady with the comeback as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are now off to the postseason. The Steelers still alive somehow, some way for the postseason. The Packers now controlling their own destiny. Just what was a bonker weekend in sports. 49ers and Raiders being close. Who would have expected that? Giants going to the postseason, thumping the Indianapolis Colts. The Dolphins. The Dolphins are now in trouble. Now, they can still make the playoffs. They got to win against the Jets, and they need the Patriots to lose to the Bills, which is very much a possibility now, because that game next week for Buffalo is going to mean something. So this is setting up to be a wild week 18, but really you go into this year in the postseason, the three teams you feel good about in the AFC, Chiefs, Bengals, Bills. And I would order them, as I said, Bills 1, Bengals 2, Chiefs 3. In the NFC, I truly don't know how this is going to go, because the rhetoric for the last few weeks was San Francisco and Philadelphia. I look at this now. Rodgers may be getting in. Brady's in. Dallas, I don't trust. Minnesota, I don't trust. Philly, when is Jalen Hurts coming back? San Francisco is the most complete team in the NFC, or one of the more complete teams in the NFC, and maybe the entire NFL. But Brock Purdy is playing really good football. Will he be able to be pretty good coming up in the playoffs? So the AFC, you start to see it materialize. But in the NFC, I would still lean Philadelphia. But it is concerning to me that Jalen Hurts, when he comes back, even though he's playing MVP ball, and maybe he ends up winning the MVP this year, because the last 2 weeks even helps his case even more by not playing and the team loses both those games, how quickly is he going to be able to get back into form? But really, that MVP conversation after yesterday, because Jefferson to have a shot was going to need to go break that Calvin Johnson record. And he needed 209 yards heading into yesterday. At one point in that game up against the Packers, where the Packers just opened up a can of whoop-ass on the Minnesota Vikings, Jefferson was late in that game without even having a catch. It was stunning. And he finishes the game, Justin Jefferson, with one catch for 15 yards. So could he go off and go break that record next week? Sure. But I don't think the Jefferson, who I was trying to make the MVP case for since week one, is going to win the award after having the no-show yesterday. And it's usually a quarterback award. Mahomes definitely is going to be in play, probably does end up winning the award. Winner of tonight, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, is going to get a big boost into the conversation. But Jalen Hurts, I still think if he comes back in week 18 and balls out and locks up that number one seed NFC East, he's very much so in play. Because the last 2 weeks without him, they've lost. And I know it was a high-scoring game up against the Cowboys, but last week, yesterday, up against the Saints, they weren't really able to do much. Now, the Coach of the Year conversation, and it's weird, I'm not really that big into NFL awards like the other sports, but the Coach of the Year conversation, and now it's sort of materialized more, this may be the most fascinating Coach of the Year conversation ever. Like, Mike McDaniel was a big case most throughout the year. Now at 8-8, even if they get in and find a way to get in the postseason at 9-8, I don't think he's winning the award. You look around, you go from division to division. If you go to the AFC West, No, Brandon Staley's done a good job, but I don't think he's going to get enough support. Now, Zach Taylor's done a nice job. I don't think he's going to win the award. AFC South, the Peterson wins the division. They'll have a shot. He'll have a shot to go win the award at 9-8. The Giants, that would be my vote personally. With Brian Daboll, people thought that team was going to have 4 or 5 wins heading into the year. And the Giants are off to the postseason at 9-6-1, and Daniel Jones looks like a more than competent quarterback. Sirianni, I think the last 2 weeks has hurt him. I'll tell you, Kyle Shanahan, and I know people are 50-50 on the Niners before the year because you just didn't know what you're getting out of the quarterback spot. No Garoppolo, no Lance. With Brock Purdy, they're 12-4. They get 13 wins. Like, he definitely could win the vote. You know, could win the award. Pete Carroll, if he gets into the postseason, 9-8 would be spectacular. I don't think it's going to be Kevin O'Connell just because even though they're 12-4 and they've been ridiculous this year from a record standpoint, there's just been too many lopsided performances when they lose. Like, you look at the way that they have lost, getting blown out by Dallas, getting blown out by Philadelphia, Detroit having their way, and then just getting thumped yesterday by Green Bay. I think that takes them out of the conversation. So as we start to see this shape up, McKeon, I guess heading into the final week of the season, would you agree that the top three candidates, in no order, Shanahan, Daboll, and then it's dependent on who gets in with Jacksonville, Seattle, just I guess it's either Peterson or Carroll for that third spot.
I'm not putting it at a Carroll. I don't know how you're not putting Tomlin there.
It's a great one.
Every single season above 500, especially this year, no Roethlisberger.
Great call.
I mean, the way that they have looked all season.
They got to get in, though.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
For him to win the award, when Brian Daboll.
He took Mr. Small Hands to a winning record.
Whoa, shut up. Stop.
Did he not?
With that nonsense.
Did he not?
That was the most over. Yeah, Joe Burrow had small hands too. How has that worked out?
So do I.
Look pretty damn good. Dexter Henry is here with us.
I'm a Steelers fan. So,
oh, yeah, you are a Steelers fan.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are you at right now? You got to be thinking you have the guy in Kenny Pickett.
And I'm a Pittleum too. So
this is now nauseating. How lovey-dovey this guy's on his honeymoon right now with this football team.
I'm thrilled with what the Steelers have done this year. I do agree that Tomlin should be in the conversation for coach of the year.
Should be in the conversation, but if they don't make the playoffs, he's not going
to
win it.
I think he does. I agree with you. I do think he needs to get in for that to happen.
So let's play out these scenarios.
Job, but I like all the scenarios you brought up. Mm-hmm. I want to say that.
Now you are someone that I would never be able to predict that you're a Steelers fan. Because now we've only had limited conversations.
Yes.
But usually you know when you're talking to a Steelers fan. Like, there's some jackass in the newsroom here during the weekend that's a Steelers fan, and he knows I'm a Patriot fan, and he doesn't like me being a Patriot fan because the Patriots have dominated the Steelers in any big game. But he sees me in the newsroom yesterday when the Patriots down, and he goes, "Your football team sucks. They're awful." And I'm like, first off, I'm in the middle of doing 12 hours of radio yesterday from WFAN and over here at CBS Sports Radio. When I go into the newsroom to go get a cup of coffee and a water and my bagel, I don't need to be talking more sports in the newsroom. But, you know, I'm a company guy. I'm friendly in the locker room, yeah, so sure. I'll entertain all conversation. And I may have said to the person, yeah, I know my team's not good. I've been saying my team's been bad all throughout the year. And that's when people are killing Belichick. I go, yeah, Belichick hasn't done a great job because you have Patricia there. You have an offense that looks like they're stuck in the 1930s. And
hey, man, he's a rocket scientist.
Patricia, geez, please. I can't even say fire him because I know they won't fire him. Just reassign him. Move him back to the defensive side of the ball. Yeah.
Ouch.
Somewhere, just not on the offense. But it's like you just know when you're with the Steelers fan because they want you to admit your team's not good. But then on the other hand, Belichick's one win away from getting to the playoffs.
So I have to be in full transparency. Yeah. I have to say this. I am a newer Steeler fan.
Oh.
I am a former Jet fan who decided to not live that life of misery anymore.
So that's why you're not like all those other Steelers fans.
Yeah. And I have respect. And as a former Jet fan,
yeah,
I respect the Pats.
Wait, so how'd you make that move?
Fraud.
No, that does not.
I've loved Dexter since he started. He was doing updates on my fan shows a few weeks ago.
Here comes the shameless plug for McKeon's fan show.
Love Dexter, fraud. How could you watch the Steelers do what they did to the Jets in that AFC Championship game, where the Jets should have won that game and went to the Super Bowl and become a Steeler? Hold on.
McKeon, let's do this. Since I am the host of this show, and it's not going to have to remind people that I'm the host of this show, I'm going to be like Tony Reale. Mute your mic for 5 minutes. We need to have some load management here, so shut up for a second so Dexter Henry could get a word in. I am fascinated by this, though, because I may have was just being nice because I don't really know you that much too well.
That's cool. It's all good.
But McKeon jumps right on the air.
He called me a fraud. He's cool.
I still love him. He's a chicken with his head cut off, McKeon. That's always been a little problem. You just got to tame down, sit. Don't move, stay. You'll get your treat in a bit. But I was thinking a little bit, that sounds a little bit fugazi myself. No, so how did it happen?
Okay. It's not fugazi if you've known people who've rooted for the Jets. Have the Jets brought anybody any happiness in their life?
Not much.
Jets fans could call in you right now.
When they had that toe-sucking coach a little bit.
It's not going to be happy. And you know what? You know what I decided to choose in my life? Happiness. Okay. I wanted to root for a competent
organization. So you wanted to get into a better mental state.
Yes.
Okay. Not going to work. Zach's a Mets fan.
No, but you know what?
I'm a Mets fan too.
Yeah, but he's dealt with. So you should know what the pain is like.
No, but you know what? Hey.
But they give me some happiness.
In the year of 2023.
There you go.
We got to prioritize your mental health. I could understand it.
My man.
I would never personally give up on my football team, but if that's the life you choose to travel, I can't kill you.
You know why
it.
You can say that? You had Tom Brady under center. I had to watch years where my best quarterback was Chad Pennington.
Oh, sorry.
Enough said.
For a second, because you said you were a Steelers fan, I'm like, why is this guy bringing out the small violin? He had Big Ben Roethlisberger, but I'm like, oh, not during those
days. That's not the Zach Elba I grew up knowing.
I'm glad you allowed me the opportunity to explain why I'm not a fraud. So thank you.
But that's a great job, McKeon, bringing Tomlin into the conversation, because I've said before, Tomlin's done a wonderful job this year. And I think Tomlin, unfortunately, gets too much crap from Steelers fans. But I just still have a tough time seeing the Steelers in the playoffs this year. But you go through the scenarios, it's possible. They got to beat the Browns this week. The Bills got to beat the Patriots, very likely. And then the Jets beat the Dolphins. That's the tough one. I don't know which way that game goes, because you don't know what's going to happen with the Jets at quarterback. You don't know what's going to happen with the Dolphins at quarterback. But if Tomlin gets in, definitely deserving of a lot of votes, because that team was, 3-7? They were left for dead.
Who are you voting for, though? Because I think you brought up a lot of interesting things. Who would you vote for?
Right now, I would be, with what I know going into Week 18, it would be between Brian Daboll and Kyle Shanahan. I would slightly lean Daboll. Now, if you would have told me Brock Purdy would be playing for the 49ers, I'd never think they'd be on the verge of getting 13 wins. But if you would have told me the Giants would be in the playoffs before the year started, I would say, what are you smoking? Like, I don't think someone would be able to pass a drug test if they told me before the year that the Giants are going to make the playoffs. One person here at CBS Sports Radio, when the schedule came out, said that the Giants are going to get 9 wins. And now, let me be fair. If Mraz said that, you could acknowledge Mraz and whatever. I don't know what Mraz's crazy prediction with the Giants was. But Kevin Wall, of all people, and right when the Giants clinched the playoff berth, right away tweeting me, you called me delusional. He said that day the Giants are going to win 9 games this season. So I got to give it up to Kevin Wall, who has since left the company. Kevin Wall has left the building. Anyway, we are a long way overdue for a break, so we got to take it here. 5 questions, 5 answers next, a little onsides, offsides. But first up, with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, a Jet fan who is now a Steeler fan, and we won't, trust me, I will never hold that against him, right? We'll never bring that back up again. Here he is, Dexter Henry.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, we got to go 2-minute drill style here up against the McKeon. What we got?
As Zach stated earlier, Michigan's coaching staff was stupid in their loss to TCU on Saturday. It was reported later on that the Broncos have reached out to Jim Harbaugh about their head coach vacancy. Zach, onside or offside? Jim Harbaugh should take the Bronco job.
So should is the key question here. Not will. It should. He should not take the Broncos job. I know they're going to make him an offer that he probably can't refuse, because that's the richest owners in the NFL right now. It'd be very Steve Cohen-like with what he does in Major League Baseball. You don't want to come here? Okay. We'll give you a fat contract, like $15 million a year, and we'll get you to say yes. If I'm Harbaugh, though, I know what the money could potentially be. You could go back to the NFL, you would think, whenever you want. Now, he wanted the Vikings job last year, didn't get it. I think there are better jobs out there than the Denver Broncos job. I don't think Russ is ever going to be an elite quarterback again. I just think he could be good. I know they have a defense. I don't love that offensive side of the ball. I think that's a bad situation. Plus, for the foreseeable future, you're in a division with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert. So should Jim Harbaugh take the Broncos job? Offside.
Offside.
I agree with you. He's not going to – he shouldn't take it, but he's going to get $150 million to go there, and he'll take it. The Packers have certainly had an up-and-down season, Zach, all year, but now they control their own destiny at home against the Lions next week. On or offside, the Packers will beat the Lions to clinch their spot in the postseason.
This is like when a puppy dog has realized he's committed a wrong, and he has to go back to his owner right now with his tail in between his legs, just begging for a treat. 2 weeks ago, when someone asked me, could the Packers go 3-0 down the stretch, I said it's more likely they go 0-3 than 3-0. As much as I would love to see the Detroit Lions find a way into the postseason, the odds that they'll even have a shot to be playing for the postseason at that game on Sunday night are still slim, because I think Seattle is going to find a way to get a victory, and the Lions are out. With the way that Rodgers just destroyed the Vikings yesterday, and they survived up against the Dolphins, as much as I just want to see Jared Goff. And here's the guy. Like, I am Mr. Wisconsin, if you listen to the show. Like, I love Wisconsin. But it's weird. Like, I really want to see the Lions get in the playoffs. Sorry. As much positive things to say about Wisconsin, there's one that I'm rooting against you. But I do think the Packers are going to win, and they're going to get in. So, yes, be onside, offside. The Packers will beat the Lions to make the playoffs. Even though I'm going to get trolled for it on social media. Yeah, onside.
Go back in the podcast later on. Me and Zach think the Packers are a very, very dangerous team going into the postseason. The Giants of New York, the football Giants, they've clinched a playoff berth for the first time since 2016.
Second-best team in New York, some may say.
After
Buffalo!
Beating...
Come on! Bills Mafia! They make you want to shout!
You done?
Yeah, I know. There's a difference. Josh Allen gave a reporter slack a few weeks ago. He's like, oh, how about the other two New York teams? He's like, well, we're a New York team.
Well, Zach, after beating down the Colts in the swamps of Jersey last weekend. I liked how you did that earlier in the show. It's a real insider thing. Onside, offside, Brian Daboll, coach of the year in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm going onsides. And I said this in the last segment. I'll say it again. Shanahan definitely has a shot, could win it. I think Sirianni the last 2 weeks has coached himself out of it. Tomlin, if he gets to the postseason, that's going to be a late push. But no one in their right mind could have believed before the year that the Giants would go to the postseason. And Daniel Jones would be playing this well. So, therefore, I'm giving it to Brian Daboll right now, coach of the year on sides.
Couldn't agree with you more. The Bills are about to go into the end zone here. It's 7-0 Bengals currently.
They may have to settle for a field goal now. It's 4th-and-3. Now, do the analytics say take the field goal?
Or do you Joe go Burrow, for it in this I think spot? They say go for it.
It looks like Josh Allen's running to the sidelines. So,
yeah, so
Tyler Bass coming onto the
field. It's about to be 7-3 Bengals, which means me and Zach are still covering in our bet. Tonight, that game's going on right now. It's a potential AFC Championship preview, in my opinion. The Bengals have they moved up late, actually, Zach. I don't know if you realize this. They were a point about all week. They were about point dogs. They moved to point to +3 in some books.
Really?
Which is where I got them. So onside or offside, the Bengals will win this game.
I think this is coming down to a 3-point or less game. I actually think this game could be decided off a 2-point conversion at the end, and one team just wins by one. It's 7-3 now, so I'm going to be honest with you. I know the Bengals are leading, and just being at 7-3 doesn't mean that the Bengals are definitely going to win. I think these are the two best teams in the AFC. I did slightly lean that Buffalo was going to win this game tonight. So the Bengals will win this game. I will go offsides right now.
And Zach, offside. Ohio State lost to Georgia by 1 point, but CJ Stroud, he balled out, throwing for 348 and 4 touchdowns. Onside or offside, CJ Stroud will be the first QB taken in the NFL draft.
So my take all throughout the year with CJ Stroud was I really liked him. I just didn't love him. And when I got a chance to talk to him at the Heisman Trophy, I said, sell me on yourself to be the number one quarterback taken in the draft. And the thing that stood out to me the most, he said, I'm more athletic than people want to give me credit for, and I hope to show that off very soon. He showed that off on Saturday night. I know he only had like 30-something rushing yards, but he had a big long run of 27. But the way he moved around the pocket, moved outside the pocket to extend time and create big plays, his legs definitely helped him when it came to him throwing big passes in that game. He is now, for me, and I always said he was a second quarterback, but he's really solidified that. And there could be a push for him to usurp Bryce Young, but I still think Bryce Young, the way that he balled out with less around him this year, and it's crazy you have to say that, but Alabama did not have talented receivers. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs was their best offensive player outside of Bryce Young. I would still go Bryce Young 1 and then C.J. Stroud 2. I know Will Levis has been on this show, but if people are saying Will Levis over Bryce Young or Will Levis over C.J. Stroud, I personally do not get that. Anthony Richardson as well, I don't get that one. But I would still say that Stroud will be the second quarterback off the board. I think Houston, if they do have the number one overall pick, will be going with Bryce Young. So C.J. Stroud will be the first QB taken in the NFL draft is the question. I will go offside.
Offside.
Zach Gelb here with you on CBS Sports Radio. 6:52 to go in the first quarter between the Bills and the Bengals, a potential AFC championship game preview getting played right now to close out week 17 in the NFL as we inch closer and closer to week 18, as we'll officially be in week 18 mode once this game does come to a close. So Bengals, they march down the field. They do get a touchdown, and then Buffalo was marching right down the field, but they had to settle for a field goal. Cincinnati, it was a five-play, 75-yard drive in 2 minutes and 26 seconds, and it concluded Joe Burrow to Tyler Boyd for a 14-yard strike, and then friend of the show, Evan McPherson, made the extra point to make it 7-0. Buffalo, 12 plays, 68 yards in 5 minutes and 42 seconds. Cole Beasley, a little bit of a timing issue there, dropped the ball on 3rd and 3. It would have been good for a first down inside the 5, and they had to settle Buffalo for the 25-yard field goal by Tyler Bass. So Bengals up 7-3 against the Bills with 6:52 to go in the first quarter.